monitor themselves with this type of issue all the time. Do you want to pull out right now, or do you want to pull out in 2 months with the plan? And the next thing you know, it's like they're fighting over something that is so minor in the grand scheme of things, instead of kind of figuring out in what ways are those two different things actually
Or, for example, how many of those Democratic Party people are dependent on military contractors and bases in their own districts? You know, like, why? In other words, yes, I think you're right. I think that's what the whole system is geared for. It's to get us caught up in this minutia that has nothing to do with the political structure of the country and why we don't have power. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, I think your point about finding the commonalities is important, but the political, I think there is an endemic, okay, so what you said was everybody's been thinking about the problems and the political structure, but I think the thinking, maybe it's a dual thing to sort of be optimistic and you have to invert your symbols and organize in the workplace and organize against the prisons and do all this, but at the same time you have to realize, why have these popular struggles continually failed in the United States? Why? I mean, I had a friend who came from Amsterdam, and he said he arrived in America, and he felt like we were a defeated people. Let's talk about that. What's really going on? You know, so I think that there's a political structure behind why those Democrats made up their mind. That's all I'm saying.
To address that question of frames, I think that we're all here, and the statistic of greater than 50% in the U.S. being anti-war, at least anti-this war, is a result of the frames that were given. So before I want to answer the question about what frames we ought to have, I want to talk about the frames we're given, and it makes people like me, and I think everyone in this room feels, is the frames we're given are bullshit, and they give you this problem down in your conscience. And, you know, this is going to sound newbie or something, But so where we need to go is creating the frames that start to straighten that shit out. And, you know, just as an example, when one thing could be, you know, let's put George Bush's portrait at the base of each sewer entrance, you know, just to reinforce the fact that this guy's going down the drain until everyone gets, you know, and just diffuse the power in some simple way like that. You know, these create other frames that turn the impressions that we're given over and over again, the assault of images on their heads. And that's why I think, and maybe I thought of that because it's these symbolism and kind of the determined kit that was created with a couple thousand logos, corporate logos that are given out for you to manipulate and, you know, use.
No, that's power.
Explicitly,
what you're describing is power.
So these kind of things, I think there's a lot of ways to go just starting from there. Any ways to get specific ideas.
Well, one thing that always kicks my ass is like, and that slogan, again, and this isn't imagining what anti-war means, but the slogan of another world is possible. For me, I think as a fan of science fiction, I find that so much, I find that equally, and I find that more powerful than the tournament, only because I feel like having the ability to recreate frameworks and networks and rework things where old enemies become allies and alliances I guess what I'm saying is, like, one thing that really kicks my ass this summer is, like, that the RCP, the Communist Party that's heavily organized in Los Angeles, is even bold enough, and I gotta give it to them, like, they're creating a countrywide tour to organize poor African American communities around another slogan similar to Another World is Possible. And for me, wow, That's like revolutionary dreaming. Like,
but come on, a revolutionary communist party.
No, I know that.
A fucking break.
Of course. No. Implicit within my statement
that's
is
the worst possible turn of events.
I agree with you 100% there, but that's.
But that doesn't matter. That's the whole point. That's my point. They're doing it. So are we going to go and get all excited and join organizations like the RCP? Is that going to solve your problem? I mean, we've been through this 100 times. Learn from the 60s. Learn how the government infiltrated dissident movements. Learn how these things were destroyed. I mean, you're just walking right into a fucking trap.
Agreed.
Total trap.
And yet, I agree with you 100%. And it's like, for me, that they are smart to actually monopolize on that energy that's going on right now, because I agree with you, that's what's going to happen. Or maybe
J.
not.
J. Edgar Hoover said he created the 1960s. I think you should listen to that.
All right, well, if I can counter Bush's recruiting of Boy Scouts, evangelicals, you know, all these people. If he can go and get all these people in under his wings by using his bullshit, his symbolism, and all that kind of stuff, how do we find new jobs for these people who are not necessarily those people, but other people in the country who, you know, maybe are our family members? How do we turn them on to what we're talking about?
Yeah. That's, I mean, for me, that's the question.
I mean, I'd like to say something about, like, a lot of when I am doing this kind of work with around the prison system, a lot of the context of that are organizing meetings where I'll show a film and then we'll talk about it. And the challenge within that, I've got a pretty, you know, radical, theoretical, you know, abstract analysis based on, like, capitalism and racism and histories of all sorts of the different things that constitute what the U.S. is today coming together within the prison system, that I'm always developing and always challenging and always, especially as I meet different people who've been affected by that system and learn more from them what that system is. But when I go to approach one of these meetings, and this is not to a group of politicized, politically active people, but to a church, you know, who are like, why is this guy coming to talk about prisons, you know, and what's this guy doing in our community, you know? I can't wear my analysis on my sleeve, and I can't start out by telling it like that, you know, this is the way things are, and if you don't get on board, if you don't start, you know, like building something against that right away, then you're fucked. I have to, like, find a way as an artist to come up with some kind of a language which, in a very subtle and forgiving way even, you know, allows people to feel like what I have to say allows them the space to feel, first of all, that they have the possibility to disagree with me, that they have the space. And I think this, I mean, this isn't just for a meeting. I think this is even within the work that we produce, you know, how we articulate our politics within the work we produce, even if we're not talking about a meeting or something like this. But giving someone the space to feel like they're able to think, you know, and to consider whether they agree with this analysis, and also to think, I mean, of course, because analysis is also abstract. An analysis is abstract and it's subjective. No matter how objectively formed it's created, it's still articulated in a subjective way. And people have to take that analysis and they have to try to connect that to something in their life that's meaningful. Because if otherwise, we're just producing robots in another direction, you know? And we have to give people, try to think as artists, as family members, as community members, when we go to have that dreaded dinner with our family, like, what are we gonna talk about? And like, you know? Why am I going to talk to my, you know, to so-and-so about maybe why it would be nice to turn Bill O'Reilly off during dinner or something, you know? I mean, how can I approach that in a way where I'm not surrendering my analysis and I'm not surrendering my politics, but I'm also not trying to flatten out every other possible politician by privileging my own out of some kind of arrogance?
But when you do that,
where I was going to get with this is that I think, like, if we think from this point, how then do we connect? How do we connect things like action, and what we might even think of as action? You know, getting back to your question about the car and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I ask myself the same. I'm sure we all do. Ask ourselves the same questions. How do we connect that analysis to things we can do, things, conversations that we can have, actions that we can take, and how do we preserve that analysis within that without saying that, like, okay, because I didn't get involved in prison work because that was something that was, because I really wanted to deal with prison work is because this was a place where I could talk about all these different things that I wanted, that were important to me. So, like, am I gonna like, take my analysis and say, okay, the prison is the site where my analysis exists, is manifested, am I going to say that everybody has to work on prison work? Is I going to say that that is the space where we all have to come together? No. What's interesting to me about the prison, and then this gets very much to this question around the anti-war, what does anti-war, how is that productive, that position? How is the position of opposing the war productive to some different cultural direction? I think that for me, within the prisons stuff, that talking about the prison issues unifies a lot of different positions, but without necessarily needing to collapse those positions. You know, like this unity has to be contingent, it has to be useful, it has to be strategic, because as soon as you like try to totalize everybody under that unity, right, then it's like, that's totalitarian, right? Then you're saying that everybody has to think this. And so I think what there's this thing about, what are you for, what are you against? You know, like, people always say, well, I know what you're against, but what are you for, right? And as if that's what we need to come up with. And I always think that, like, that's such a trap, because how are we all going to come up with something that we're for that we're all going to agree with? I mean, isn't that, like, part of the failure of a lot of the promises of the, you know, of communism and lots of different movements that we identify with historically? But we think that there's a single goal we can get to. And I think that talking about what we're against at least allows us to line up. You know, in the 60s, what brought together all these different positions was not the war, but the war was a particular ground that the Black Power movement, that feminist movements, that gay rights movements all found themselves on the same field, right? And then that position allowed them a space to, I think, as you're talking about, you know, about these the gathering you're talking about up in Oakland, you know, this is a space where suddenly something allows these things, people to say, we have something and we can unite, not collapse ourselves, but we can unite against something that we want to oppose, and that becomes a starting point or a basis for work. And I just think that's really important in terms of how we think about the relationship of analysis to action, how we think about our specific positions that we bring to the table, how we relate to others, and how something like an anti-war position can be useful to thinking about the fractured sort of state of the left, for example, and people who aren't even in the left, but are potentially the unchanneled dissatisfaction you're talking about, the thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I had an example of, unless anyone else wants to go, I keep going back to things and stuff, but while I was thinking, I thought of one, I think, successful example, we can argue that or not, but of a shift in frames in the labor movement. And it's a recent example, and maybe it's not going as strong as it was, but I think it's had a reasonable amount of success. And that's the kind of Dog Arnold campaign. And that's basically where you get people to show up everywhere this guy goes, and you get those photos in the paper and news coverage and so on and so forth, that controlling the images that we're seeing, so that everyone knows you're diffusing the Terminator image to this, you know, guy that can't show up anywhere without a bunch of angry nurses yelling. You know? So his whole, I mean, he's a buffoon now, you know, and I think that's been effective, that change has taken place, and he's backed off, you know, his at least tension issue for the but let me transition real quick.
And maybe we should also like think about wrapping this up, like in terms of making closing statements.
Okay. Well, this will be my closing one. Because
you don't have to, just I'm thinking about it, so.
Right. Well, I want to elevate the discussion again to the cultural, because for me, if I'm gonna place my bets on either the cultural revolution pulling it off or the political revolution, I'm going to put my bets on the cultural one, because, as Fred, I think, has pointed out, the other way is booby trap. They've got it rigged. But I think we're smart enough. I think we're smart enough as cultural producers to pull it off the other way. I think it's uncharted territory. So I'll leave it at that one. Right?
On the other hand, what happened to the hate ash?